Go to Rashi. So we did yesterday two psukim. Can you hear me well, everyone? Can you hear me well?
Yes.
For some reason, I'm not so sure I'm able to hear you as well.
You hear me?
Yeah, I hear you, Mr. Cohn, Rabbi Dr. Cohn. I can barely hear you. It's very faint.
You have a number of titles.
You have a number of titles. Rav and Doctor.
Rabbi, Doctor, Colonel.
Colonel. You're a colonel also?
I like that.
You're a colonel?
Yes.
You served in the army?
As a chaplain.
Woo! So I think we're going to call you Colonel.
I like that.
Colonel.
Don't spell the K-E-R and the...
Well, unless there's a kernel of truth in it.
So you must know Ira Cronenberg. So you know Ira Cronenberg.
No.
Really? Okay. How many Jewish kernels are
there? Well, he might be a little older, you know, though.
Yeah.
I am.
Okay, let's begin. Let us begin. We're on Perik. Rabbi Sai. Okay, Rabbi Sai, let's begin. We're on Perik. Mayor Appeldorf here is in the room. He's live. Live in the room. He's here.
Lucky you. Allegedly.
A virtual version.
Woo! You heard that. Page 822, Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk Yud Beis. Vo'imar Alehem, I said to them, Im toy be'enechem havu sechori, v'im loy chadolu. I said to them, if you are satisfied with my service, pay up. If you're not satisfied, then I quit. Then chadolu, desist, which in this context we learned yesterday according to the Mishnah Stavit, take back your sheep. Take your sheep and leave me alone. And the workers vayishklu es sechori shloshim kosef, they gave me 30 silver coins. Vayomer Hashem elai, Hashem said to me, after you got the wages, I want you to take the one money that you earned. I want you hashlicheu elai yoitzer. I want you to deposit the money in the yoitzer. What is the yoitzer? So we learned yesterday, according to the Mishnah, it means in the storage house, the pushka. Put the money away for safekeep. Put the money away for safekeeping in a fund, in a special endowment fund for the Binyan Beis HaMikdash. El HaYoytzer, the Yoytzer, the word Yoytzer, Miloshen, and Otsar. It's really a big stretch of the translation. Yoytzer, what does Yoytzer have to do with the word an Otsar? It's a completely different word. Completely different word, Yoytzer. But that's what he says. Look at the Mitzuda Sion. HaYoytzer, K'may HaOytzer, Ubo HaYud, Bimkoyim HaAlef, Ki aleph hey vav yud mischalev. Those words come from the same part of the mouth, and at times we interchange the letters. Those four letters are interchanged, and therefore the word yoitzer turns to ho-yitzer, and in this context it means put the money away in the special endowment fund for the binyan beis hamikdash. And eder hayukar asher yokarti me'alehem. Then the pasuk goes on to say, we're going to learn according to the mitzvah stavit. The eder, he didn't even really translate these words. The eder means the splendor. Hayakar also means splendor. Two words which mean the same thing. The Eder Hayakar, Asher Yokarti Me'alehem, let's read the Mitzvah of it again. On the bottom of the page, on page 824, Asher Yokarti Me'alehem, Asher Hichbadeti Lihiyois Mimal Lohem Atara Al Roisham, which I have weighed down upon them to be a crown upon their head. So the word, according to the Mitzvah stuff, the word yokarti means weight. It is something which is very heavy. It is a crown. The word eder means splendor, and it's very heavy, which is a crown. Ritzon loymar sitka shloshim hatzadikim. According to the Mitzvah stuff, the 30 silver coins are symbolic of the 30 tzadikim in whose merit the Beis Hamikdash will be rebuilt. The weight of these 30 tzaddikim, shebechol dar v'dar, shemur hi liyos banui b'zchusam habayis ha'asid. The weight of these 30 tzaddikim of every single generation and their merit, in their merit is what the Beis Hamikdash will be built. Okay, asher yakarti me'alehem, which I have weighed down upon them, the words are very hard to translate. Ve'ekcha shlosh makesed, the pasuk concludes, I took 30 silver coins. Vashlech oso beis Hashem el hayotzer, I threw it into this pushkar, to the storehouse, preparing for the binyan of the bayis shlishi, or the bayis whatever, the bayis shlishi, I guess. Okay, so let's review. So according to the pasuk, to the stuff we only learned over here two psukim, and these are very very difficult psukim. And the very esoteric, as we learned in the very first Rashi in Sefer Zechariah. Everything in Sefer Zechariah is extremely esoteric, and very hard to grasp, very abstract. And he understands this to mean that this is a continuation of the story, where Zechariah has approached people who own animals that are of very poor quality, and he has negotiated with them to be the shepherd of these very poor quality sheep, and he has concluded his term of service. And now he says to the owners of the animals, I'm giving you an ultimatum: either you pay me for my service or I quit. And the people who own the animals, they say to Zechariah, you did a good job, we want you to continue service, here's 30 silver coins. He takes 30 silver coins and he puts it away into some otsar. Mitzudas David, in his unique understanding, explains that this whole story here is a reference to Hashem and Klal Yisrael. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the shepherd. The owners of the animal are Klal Yisrael. And Hashem says to Klal Yisrael, I have served you. I have protected you. Are you satisfied with my service? If you are, then pay up the wages. What are the wages? Observe the mitzvahs, the Torah mitzvahs. If you do not want to observe my mitzvahs, you do not want to pay the wages for my service, then I quit. Then I will abandon you, and I will no longer serve you. I'll no longer take care of you, guard you. Klal Yisrael says, no, don't abandon us. Here are 30 silver coins. What does that mean? 30 tzaddikim. Every generation produces, even though maybe the vast majority of Klal Yisrael are not worthy, are not righteous, but every generation, we have a merit that every generation produces 30 tzaddikim that in their merit it is worthy for the Beis HaMikdash to be rebuilt. So Hashem takes those 30 tzaddikim, he puts them aside, and he puts them away in safekeeping in order to build this magnificent, he makes an investment in some hedge fund in order to prepare for the binyan of the Bayis Shlishi, which in this pasuk we are using some very unique terms. We're calling over here the Eder HaYikar, the splendor of glory, which Asher Yokarti Me'alehem. I don't really have a good translation, which is heavy. Yokar means heavy, which is, it weighs down upon you.
All I know is from what it says in the Sofa from the Mitzudas David, Asher Hechabadeti Lios Mimal Lohem Atara, which Hechabadeti, I don't know how that really word really comes into play over here. It's heavy. I weigh down in order that it should be for you a crown on your head. In the merit of these 30 tzaddikim that you've produced, I will use them as an investment for the Beis HaMikdash.
All right, okay, now one thing is very interesting. See, there is a very beautiful lesson that comes out of the Mitzudas David. That every generation, no matter how much we fail in being loyal and faithful, observant, and true to the mission, just the fact that Klal Yisrael as a whole continues to endure, it has to be that somewhere there are 30 tzaddikim in the world that really, really do it right. We don't know who those 30 tzaddikim are. Probably the 30 tzaddikim themselves do not know who they are. But the fact...
So this is one variation.
One variation of many.
Of the, of 36 and 45. Right.
There's a whole long collection. There's a large collection of tzaddikim that in whose merit HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the world continues to exist.
The world continues, not necessarily the Beis HaMikdash, but the existence.
So that's exactly the point. Obviously, the fact that the Chazal give different numbers, and the numbers seemingly contradict one another, it must be that each set of numbers represents a different facet. maybe when it talks about over here the way the Mitzudas understands the number 30, these 30 are needed specifically for the Binyan Beis HaMikdash, La'asalava.
That is, it's a lower number than the minimum needed for the world to be sustained, according to the other versions.
Okay, so there are different numbers.
Saying you can't say less than the number that sustains the world sustains the possibility of the Beis HaMikdash. That's not logical.
I don't know. Who says? It's a different dimension. It's a different purpose. It's a different role.
Say 30 in Eretz Yisrael and 15 in Bavel. So it's 45.
45. That's another interpretation.
We'll get to the 45.
Okay, there are many different interpretations. Whatever it is, over here, according to the Mitzudos, the number 30 is very specific. It is in their merit that the Beis HaMikdash will be built. It's not the present. Over here, Hashem is telling Zechariah, take the 30 coins and deposit them in safekeeping for the future. So it's an investment. It's not something which is now. When we talk about the 36, that I don't remember these are different Amar Chazal. You have to go back and study them in much more detail what the context of those statements are. Maybe it means today. Why doesn't the world just implode, or just the chaos should reign supreme? Why is it that there's a siyata d'shamayim that the world is stable to a degree, to a small degree? We're able to wake up in the morning and able to go about our business. And we're not overwhelmed with daigus that it will come to an end tomorrow. It's a special bracha. It's in the merit of tzaddikim. So maybe that's the 36th tzaddikim. That's not the same as these 30 tzaddikim who we don't need their merit for today. Their goal, their function, their role is to serve as a inspiration or a merit for the future. They're put away in safekeeping their merit for the Binyan Beis HaMikdash La'asalava. Everyone has their role. Life is complicated. Everyone has their place, their purpose, their role. And everyone comes together. Everyone together achieves the continuation of this world and the investment of going forward to a better world. All right, let's look at Rashi. With that in mind, we come to Rashi. Rashi back in Pasuk. Back, we have to go back to Pasuk, Yud.
By the way, when Abraham prayed for Sodom, he asked about in Shloshim Tzadikim, one of the numbers.
Okay.
No Ashrit
Ba'avon Hashem.
So Hashem said, I'm not going to do any,
Right, and you have to say, And you have to say something very important. Rav Kalman says very important, because every time a tzaddik makes a request, he mispalel, there's no such thing as a tefillah being rejected. Every single tefillah, somewhere, somehow, will have an impact. It may not be today, it may be in 10 years, maybe 50 years, maybe for your grandchildren, your great-grandchildren. When you mispalel, there's a tradition, there is no tefillah that comes back empty-handed. We just don't see it, and we don't know when it will come into play. If the Torah elaborates to such intense detail regarding the tzfilos of Avraham Avinu, where he's mispalel, are there 50 tzaddikim, 45, 40, 30, 20, 10, everyone, and the Torah elaborates in such intense detail, every one of those tzfilos had an impact. And there are midrashim and there are different ideas where if we were to study Tanakh and study world history, we will take note that the tefillah, each tefillah of Avraham Avinu, in essence, was being mispalel for a different generation, for a different tekufa. And if Kalman is trying to suggest that maybe when it said when Avraham Avinu was mispalel, maybe there are 30 tzaddikim, don't destroy Sodom, although at the moment Hashem doesn't mention stone.
Mention the word stone. Okay.
So when so once already he was being mispalel, although maybe from our perspective. It was for Sodom, and Hashem did not listen and answer to save Sodom, but that tefillah did not go back empty-handed. And Rav Kalman is suggesting that when he said 30, that 30 refers to these 30 that we were discussing over here, that these 30 are being put away for the future in their zuchus. The Mikdash will be rebuilt. Now notice that the way the Mitzvah explains is in every generation. In every generation, there are 30. So you have to do a study of how many years is a generation, which is a very complicated topic,
after how many years do we say we're in a new generation, and then add up all the years, all the generations since the time of the Churban Bayis Sheni or the Churban Bayis Rishon until the coming of Mashiach, and then you'll be able to count how many tzaddikim there were. And obviously it'll be a very interesting number to define how many tzaddikim there were. And also, do tzaddikim overlap? No, sometimes it comes a point that the person, they know they retire. The tzaddik retires. And now there's another tzaddik who becomes part of the big 30. And even though the other person's a tzaddik, but he's no longer part of the 30. You know, there are 30 superstars. It's an all-star game. It may not be in Georgia, but you know, in Colorado, there's an all-star game going on. Who are the 30 tzaddikim? Let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi, Pasuk Yudbeis. It's on page 822. Pasuk Yudbeis, V'oimar, I said aleihem. I said about them. El Malche Yehuda Hanosarim. Now, this is going to get really complicated because each one of the commentators is learning these psukim as a continuation of their understanding of the previous psukim. The Mitzudais David understood this to be a real story where Zechariah was told to purchase or to shepherd sheep. He continued in that theme. Rashi did not learn like that. Rashi learned that we are describing the Malach, the kings of the Bayis Rishon. And he's continuing that theme. Voimar lehem el Malcha Yehuda Hanoi Sarim, after the death of Asalia, Rashi learned that the third king that we were discussing was Yoash. When Asalia, the wicked Asalia, she wiped out all of the kings, the living descendants of David HaMelech, and eventually, after 6 years, there was a coup that rose up to overthrow her, and they installed Yoash. So there were still many years to go until the Churban. So Hashem said to the remainder of kings that existed in the timeline from the time of Yoash until the Churban Bayis Rishon, I said concerning them, Im toy b'eineichem, chavu sichori kaimu mitzvosai. This is similar to the mitzvot of David. If you observe my mitzvos, v'hu yes sichori al kol ha'tov asher nasati lechem, and that will be payment for all of the good things I have done for you. Just like you give payment, you give a bonus to a shepherd. And I will then renew the contract. If you will pay me my wages and you will give me a bonus, I will reciprocate and continue to serve. I will protect you. V'im lo chadolu v'gam ani lo etiv lochem. If you do not want to pay me my wages, if you do not want to observe my mitzvot, then I will no longer protect you. Then v'chein motzinu she'amar hakadosh baruch hu liyecheskel ha'shemeya yishma v'hechodel yechdol. We find the same exact word in regard to Yechezkel. Those who want to listen, list. Those who want to want out, we will break the contract. Okay, we will break the contract. This is a very fascinating topic in Jewish history, and it's a very controversial topic of can a Jew ever really leave Klal Yisrael? So technically, it's impossible. Once you are a Jew, you are always a Jew. There's a Yisrael Mumar. Just because the Christians, they snatch Jewish babies and they baptize them, it's nonsense. It means totally nothing. What does it mean? It means nothing. They put them in a bathtub. They put them in some water in a river. It's baloney. It has no significance. There's no such thing. There's no such thing as a Jew converting out of Judaism. That is an impossibility. Yet, we do find, this is a very ugly and controversial topic of, is there such a thing as a Jew becoming...
Hitler, Yimach Shemo, I knew that very well too.
We don't have to go look at Hitler. Hitler, Yimach Shemo, is not part of the equation. Hitler is a Russian, Rushi Yimach Shemo. We don't even have to go there. He's not part, he's part of the equation. We have to look at this from our perspective. We have to ask the question, is there such a thing as a Jew converting out? Now, you'd be very shocked to learn. Now, in our generation, there's no question about it. We live in a culture, and this is partially due to the blessing of living in America, of no Jew will be left behind. To quote Avram Fried, no Jew will be left behind. That is an American
value. Okay, there are laws, no child left behind. That who's the initiator of that? No child left. That was Bush, no child left behind. In America, it's the land of opportunity. You live in the land of opportunity, you can make out of yourself whatever you want. There will be funding, there will be people to help you. It is an incredible blessing that is unprecedented in world history, where you are unlimited in what you can make out of yourself. You have to want. The opportunities are there, and if you want, you'll get. This was not the case in the world, in the entire history of the world. Person was born into a certain status, a certain situation, and that's it. There is no mobility. Or if there is mobility, it's extremely limited. And your chance of breaking out of your status are very, very small of being able to make a difference. In Klal Yisrael, in America, the attitude is every single Jew, you know, we have to find them. Search and seek and find the Jews. Lubavitch is heavily steeped in this philosophy, is to find a Jew, identify a Jew, and bring him back home. Before America, pre-war Europe, that was not the attitude. The attitude was that people who made a conscious decision, they don't want to be part of Klal Yisrael, you're not part of Klal Yisrael. No one's coming to run after you to bring you back. You don't want to be part, you're not part. Ad kedei kach, let's say a rav, these are incredible tshuvas of a person. Are you allowed to sell your chametz to a Jew who's not religious? You have a Jew who is a self-hating Jew, has absolutely nothing to do with religion, does not go to shul, is not shomer Shabbos, is married to a non-Jew. Nothing, okay. Nothing of that. Yet he himself has the greatest yichus. He comes from the biggest yichus, the greatest rebbes, but he couldn't care less, and he doesn't want to know from anything. Are you allowed to sell your chametz to him for Pesach? By selling your chametz to him, he will then be over in Baal Yei Rohe, Baal Yei Matzei, and you seemingly are going to be over in Lifnei Iver. You're causing him. So you would say today, of course not, of course not, because we're all American. We're all Americans, and we're all in a mindset of, he's a Jew, call Chabad, 1-800-CHABAD. We have to go in emergency, we have to go.
In Eretz Yisrael, they just passed him that you cannot, if you're about tshuva, you can't give your parents a COVID shot because there'll be Mechal Shabbos.
What? Yeah. If you're about teshuva, you cannot give your parents a COVID shot because of what? I understand.
Because they will be Mechal Shabbos.
So what? Who cares? What does it do to you?
Some idiot passed.
I don't understand. Like, I don't understand what you're saying. I really don't understand that. We have to be eyeing into that, what Ramey is talking about. But yeah.
Can I just mention something? Last week, twice on a certain news channel that I was watching, they called upon a so-called rabbi to discuss Passover and also the Easter. Non-Jewish holiday.
Easter.
And this guy wearing a black hat and he's some rabbi. He's from the Messianic Jews.
Jews of Jane?
I wrote both times to the network. I also wrote to CJV, you know who they are, Coalition for Jewish Values. How about this guy? He has a Jewish sounding name.
All right, I don't know, but we have a very frightening term, chodelu. If you don't want chodelu, what does that word chodelu mean? It means get lost, go, get out of here. If you take the word to its extreme, it almost gives you the impression, if you want out, so go out. You're not Jewish. We'll sell you the chametz for Pesach. We'll treat you like a Shabbos goy. Are you allowed to ask him to turn on the lights? Letzarech mitzvah. It's a letzarech mitzvah. There are times when it's permitted to ask a non-Jew to do for you labor. So are you allowed to ask an irreligious, self-hating Jew who's married to a non-Jewish woman and has absolutely nothing to do with religion, Yadus, even though he comes from very good Yichus, very Choshev Yichus, are you allowed to treat like a Shabbat's going to turn on the lights? Well, in America, you would say, of course not. Chas v'sholom. You call Chabad. Let's do something for this poor fella. He's all mixed up. He's all confused. But pre-war Europe...
Chabad to turn on the lights?
No, he asked Chabad to help this fellow, to get him back where he needs to be. But pre-war Europe, you know what the answer is? Yeah, you can ask him to turn on the lights. You want to be a guy? You are a guy. I read recently a story. I don't remember the name of the gadol. It was a very frightening story, where he was listing his children. He was in Europe, and his children, grandchildren, already went to America. I don't remember the details, but my mind, I believe it was probably the very beginning of the 20th century, or the late end of the 19th century, and they came to America. And there was basically nothing here in America. There were no yeshivas, there was nothing. And the vast, vast majority of Jews who came to America at that time threw their tefillin in the Hudson when they came to Ellis Island. They were done. They were done with Yadus. And he was writing about his children, and the person who was analyzing the letter of one of these very, very famous Gedolim of Klal Yisrael took note that in the letter, when he mentioned his children, some of them he wrote after their name, like you're shlita, when you're after a person's name, sheyichya liyamim toivim aruchim. Sometimes after a person's name, they have the letters nun yud, nero yoir, may his light shine brightly. These are expressions of he shall live a long life. So it's fascinating. He wrote in the letter all of his children, grandchildren, and he only added, I don't remember the details, but those terms of blessing, sheyichye liyamim toivim aruchim, or shetichye, sheyichyu, shetichye, depending on gender, male, female, or nero yohir, only on select members of his family. And other members of his family, he left out those abbreviations. And the person who did the study, he showed, because those people were not religious anymore. And when he wrote this letter, he knew already they were not religious, and he had no hope for them. And he didn't even bother, these are his own children, grandchildren, he didn't even bother writing after their name, Nero Yoyer. What grandfather would not write about their grandchild after they write their grandchild's name, Nun Yud? May his light shine brightly. He should live a long, healthy life. Today, no matter what, a grandfather will write that about his grandchild, no matter where he's holding in this world. But there were different times in Jewish history where people took religion so seriously that if your grandchildren were not following in Bederach Yisrael Saba, then the grandparents, they wrote them off. They sat Shiva, Rachmana Litzlan, and they would. And in this letter, in this dogma that this article, he showed, he did not write. He was like very selective. And study, if you do some research and study where they were holding in this world, where and what became of them, it's just shocking. It's amazing how.
My mother told me she had a couple of friends who were like one when she married a Shegitz during the war, her father taught Korea.
Yeah. And he sat Shiva. Yeah. But it's not just that. Once they did that, they became in halacha almost, if you can say such a thing, goyim. What do you mean? That's impossible. Once you're a Jew, there is no way out. This is the difference between Avraham. This is like one of the pachadim when I was in Chaim Berlin. Probably the most classic pachad Yitzchak. So Chaim Berlin, Rav Chutner. So tell me a vart. Tell me a vart from Chaim Berlin, from Rav Yitzchak Chutner. Tell me one vart. You know, if that's the old, you talk about a Rebbe. Oh, he's your Rebbe? Tell me something that he taught you. Tell me something unique that he taught you. I'm afraid people will ask you, people in the Kollel, so what did you learn here all these years? I don't know. It's pretty pathetic, right? Pretty pathetic. So what is probably the most classic vart of Chaim, of Rav Chutner? The answer is, Avraham, it's in Yiddish. I don't even know the Yiddish. See, I'm also ignorant. But in English, it goes something like, Avraham Avinu was the first one to be. He was a goy, and he became Jewish. Yitzchak was the first one to be born Jewish. FFB, from birth. But Yitzchak, if he wanted, he could have left. He could have, there was an exit. There was a real exit. Esau, how do you know there's a real exit? Well, look at Yishmael. Yishmael wasn't born Jewish. That's not a really good example. Okay, but Yaakov Avinu was the first that can't leave. This is a word from the Pachad Yitzchak. The difference in their status. Avram Avinu was a goy. He became Jewish. Yitzchak was born Jewish, but if he wanted to, he could have left. The door was open to leave. For real. Yaakov was born Jewish and can't leave. He's stuck. There's nothing he can do to leave. Keva Yisrael the Chota. Afal Yisrael the Chota Yisraelhu. It's a Chazal. If a Jew sins, a Jew goes off the derech, doesn't matter. A Jew is a Jew no matter what. There's nothing a Jew can do. That is a different principle. A different principle. But these are the three madregos of the Avos. Avram, the first to become Jewish. Yitzchak, the first one to be born Jewish, but he can still exit. And Yaakov is in a matzah of where you can't leave. Now, take that idea, that principle, which is absolutely true, beyond a shadow of a doubt, yet historically, and look at all of the teshuvos, the rabbinic responsa, the rabbinic literature, as Rabbi Kevlowitz says, and you will see, you have to use that with a grain of salt. It's not absolute. The haraya, if it happens to be, and this is very common, you sell your chametz to who you think is a goy, and then guess what? You've been selling it to this goy for 20 years, and now you discover, oh, you never told me your mother's Jewish. So it turns out that you've really been selling your chametz to a Jew. So Rav Moshe writes, big deal. Who cares? Lechatchila, don't sell your chametz to a Jew who unfortunately has not yet returned. A Jew has not yet been choyze b'shuva, you should not sell your chametz. But if Chas V'Shalom, it turns out that after the fact, you sold your chametz to a Jew who is thoroughly irreligious, so what? So what? Big deal. Big deal. It means nothing to him, so it's nothing to him. You've done nothing wrong. He is what he is. He is, in halacha, a guy. He is a guy. Okay, this is a shocking thing to many people hear this thing, but this is absolutely true. This is the way it was in pre-war Europe. In America, it's the culture that has shaken us not to accept this, because we know deep down inside that the culture and the environment and the opportunities of America are so powerful, you can take even the most hardened, irreligious Jew, even someone like Chuck Schumer has hope. Abichol, you still there? Abichol, you still there? Why do I say that? Because Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Rav Steinman said about Yair Lapid. Yair Lapid was really, really bad. Now you don't hear so much about him anymore. Now he's quiet. You don't hear all that much. But years ago, he was really, the hatred for him was by the Haredi world was so intense. It was just unreal. An American can't even appreciate such hatred. And Rav Steinman said, everyone can do tshuva. He could also do tshuva. It really shook up a lot of people when he said that. When Steinman said that, it shook up a lot of people because everyone would say, like, chutz me'acher. You know what it says in the Gemara Chazal? Everyone can do choyze b'shuva. Chutz? The Baskol said there's one person we're not going to allow to do tshuva. Acher. Elisha ben Avuya, because of what he did, he went off the derech, because of he was choyte machte. He was a choyte machte. And that's why he told his Talmidim, I can't do tshuva, I have the baskol. Don't listen to the baskol. You can also do tshuva. Don't be influenced by the baskol. You can also do the tshuva. You say such a principle by a Jew. You do not say such a principle by a goy. By Hitler, Yimach Shmo V'Zichro, there's no tshuva. By Paro, there's no teshuvah. These people get what they deserve. There's no teshuvah for these people. But by a Jew, Yisrael dechoto, afalpi dechoto, Yisrael. But in the meantime, this is the part that in America we have a very hard time, Baruch Hashem, in America we have a very hard time accepting this. In the meantime, he's a guy. And what's the biblical source? Prove it. How do you have a right to say such a thing? I can show you the teshuvah about selling your chametz to an irreligious Jew. Why not? He knows what's going on. Think about it. Who would you rather sell your chametz to? A goy or a Jew who went off the derech? I would sell it to a Jew, one of the derech, because he understands what you're doing.
Very improbable. It's very improbable that to happen in America. Because such a Jew, if you tell him, I'm selling the chametz because I have to sell it to a guy, he would say, I'm sorry, I'm really not a guy. You know.
It happens all the time.
Where
people find out Shabbos goyim, people who are used to turn on the lights and they sell chametz all the time, they find out years later that he was Jewish. What would he want? Cardinal O'Connor. He would have been the Pope.
The Jewish Shabbos guy.
He wasn't really Jewish. I had a long conversation with him. His mother was a guy. His mother was a guy, but in the family, one of his grandfathers would sit and learn the whole day. One of his grandparents or great-grandparents used to sit and learn. But he wasn't, what was his name? Remember his name? Alan, you remember his name?
Whatever. I don't recall, but I went to that car, so used cars.
Right, yeah. So we had a long conversation with him. He had Jewish blood. That's obviously why he enjoyed the shul. I remember once when Shmuel Goldstein, he came into shul Friday night and he said there was no one in the shul. And Shmuel Goldstein needed something in his house. Someone turned on the lights in his house, some emergency. So he walks into shul and he says, "Where's the guy? Where's the guy? I need the guy." I didn't realize that guy was there on the other side of the room. He didn't see him. And he was so insulted. How do you call me a guy? How could you call me a guy?
That's what I'm trying to say. If they would know that
But he was a guy.
If their mother is Jewish, they would not be considered a guy. And you're telling him, I'm selling you the chametz because you're a guy. He would say, no.
No, but I'm telling you, it happens all the time. It does happen all the time where people end up, they sell, and then they find out, oh, they're really Jewish. They didn't know. They did not know that their mother was really Jewish. They were misled, or they thought just because their mother was Jewish, they didn't know that makes them also Jewish. It happens all the time. But Rav Moshe says, and other places can say, after the fact, it's fine. It's not a problem because if a person is living a lifestyle of a guy, he is a guy. Now, what's the biblical source to say such a thing?
Esther.
It's this pasuk.
Son of Esther.
What do you mean, Daryavish?
Yeah.
That's just historical.
Was he a Jew or was he a guy?
I don't know. We don't know. It's a very big mystery.
No, he's treated as a guy.
It's a very big mystery. Daryavish HaParsi. What was his status? Daryavish HaParsi was Jewish. Okay, I'm not going in the Kabbalah world where he was that there was another woman who gave birth to him. If we assume that Daryavish HaParsi was a biological product of Esther and Achashverosh, that means Daryavish HaParsi was Jewish. Do we find him putting on tefillin? Do we find him Shomer Shabbos? No, I don't know. Who knows? Who knows? No one knows anything. We don't know what happened. But what's the biblical source that if a Jew wants out, he's out? It's this pasuk. This pasuk, this term is a very powerful term. Hashem says to the people, if you don't want to be religious, then that's right. Chadolu, out, desist, separate yourself. You don't want, you don't want. You have a choice. There's choice. You want to be Jewish? Good. You don't want to be Jewish? You don't want to pay me my wages? You don't want to pay me my wages and be Shomer Torah Mitzvahs? Then you're not Jewish. It's an active term. It's not just a passive word. The word is a powerful word. Pick yourself up and get out. You're not part of the Jewish people. And there is halachic consequences with making a conscious decision to leave. Today, we'll say more or less, everyone that's not religious is a tinoik shenishba. They never made a conscious decision to be irreligious.
That's the attitude we have in America, and many poskim hold that's the attitude we have towards irreligious Jews in Israel, in Eretz Yisrael. However, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach was not so generous. Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach held that a Jew in Eretz Yisrael, being part of the country, being exposed continuously to the religious element of the Jewish people living in Eretz Yisrael, it's not so, I don't know the exact words, but he didn't give them a pass. He was, it was a big machlekes upon this already years ago. Today, it's certainly much, much more complicated because today it's a much more religious country. But going back 20 years ago, there was a big machlekes upon what are the status of the chilonim in Eretz Yisrael? Are they termed tinoik shenishba, a baby that was captured? It's not their fault. They grew up irreligious. They don't know from anything. They don't know from anything. So what do you want from them? In the world of halacha, you cannot teach them as a napikores, someone that willingly rejects religion. You can't say that because it's not their fault. Many of the Gedolei Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael paskin that every single religious Jew in Eretz Yisrael is called a tinok shenishba. If I'm not mistaken, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach and others disagreed. In Eretz Yisrael, there's too much religion out there. And every single person, at some point in time, has to make a decision. You don't have to become a Haredi. All that's asked is just, you know, traditional, just to be respectful. You know, put on the mask when you're in a store. just do the bare minimum, at least have some respect. And to openly reject it, he held it is a problem. It's a problem which puts them in a different category that's already outside the category of Tinuk Shanishba. In America, you can't say that. America's a totally irreligious country. There's no religion in America. There's nothing. Jews, Orthodox Jews, well, you have a few Orthodox Jews running around Lakewood, Far Rockaway, in Flatbush and Borough Park, and a few other little cities here and there. What are you supposed to know from religion in America? There's no religion in America. So in America, you can say about a Jew, no, he's a Tinuk Shanishba. But in Eretz Yisrael, it's too much. There's too much religion. And this pasuk cannot be ignored. The term chodelu is a powerful, very powerful word. Let's go further. Let's go further to Rashi. Rashi over here says, next words, and also Yecheskel as well. Yecheskel said the same exact thing. Ashomea yishma, vehechodel yechdol. Get lost. Those who don't want to be part of it, so pick yourself up and leave. You're not part of it. Pasuk next. Vayishklu es sechori shloshim kosef. They gave me. So what happened was the Klal Yisrael, they listened to Hashem's ultimatum, and they gave Hashem 30 shkolim. Now, by the way, isn't it very interesting that shloshim shel eved, that if you kill Nevekanani, if your axe kills an Eved Kenani, how much do you have to pay the master? 30 shkolim. Shloshim shel Eved. 30 shkolim. And look, over here you have a match in Sefer Zechariah. 30 shkolim is the wages of a shepherd. Now it's not telling you the term, but it's telling you that same number. A shepherd is like a slave. No, a shepherd, like Yaakov Avinu said to Lavan, I work for you 24/7. I was frostbitten. I suffered a heat stroke. I suffered this, suffered that. I did not go to sleep. 24/7 is a slave. And what are the wages that the slave is getting? 30 shkolim. Likewise, in Eved Kenani, it's property. If your axe kills a slave, how much do you pay? 30 shkolim. There's obviously some connection between the two. I took 30. Klal Yisrael says to Hashem that we have produced in every generation some good men. Although maybe the vast majority of Klal Yisrael are not 100%, but there are some good people that are sincere. Anashim toivim me'at hoyu bohem sh'osu ritzoniku goyna hechodosh ha'masker. Doniel, Hananya, Mishael, Va'azaria, V'Yecheskel. So over here is coming to give you a list that every generation, no matter how evil they are,
No matter how evil they are, there's always going to be, in every generation, there's always going to be some good people, some good, solid people. And he actually, since the Rashi learns, Rashi over here is telling us the timeline. This event is discussing the time of the Bayis, the beginning of the Bayis Sheni. Rashi, he enumerates who some of the tzaddikim were at this period of time. Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah, Daniel, and Yechezkel. It is interesting that Rashi did not mention Yirmiyah and did not mention Mordechai v'Esther. They overlapped. Mordechai v'Esther lived in the time of Daniel. So once you're saying Daniel, why don't you want to go mention Mordechai v'Esther? How come Rashi did not mention Yirmiyah? If Rashi is mentioning Yechezkel, mention Yirmiyah. Yirmiyah and Yechezkel exactly the same time. Why is Rashi so selective as to who the 30 tzaddikim are? I don't know, but he is. Ulashoyin Shloshim Kesef, Lo Yedati L'Chavin Kan. Rashi is not telling us what is the significance of the number 30. Ela Kesef Loshim Chemda. And also, but what is this meaning of the word silver? This the Mitzudis David picked up on the same thing. Kesef means Kisufim. It means love, yearning, a desire. People who have a desire to be close to Hashem. Avav was saying Parashukin Bechulin, the Vir Ra'oyat Saror HaKesef Lokach Biyado, and that Pasuk in Mishnah, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, when he's fed up, he takes the tzaddikim. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu is fed up with the generation, he takes the bundle of silver in his hand and he goes away. He takes the tzaddikim away with him. The tzaddik Hashem takes, before the evil comes to the world, the tzaddikim depart. And here, Rav Michal mentioned this before, over here Rashi is citing a different chazal that says in every generation there are 45 righteous people in every generation. There are 30 who live in Eretz Yisrael and 15 who live in Chutz La'aretz. There is a choymer. A choymer is 30 saw, and a lesach is 15, a half of a choymer. Chamish osa bebavel u'shloishim be'eretz Yisrael shnemar vo'ekcha shloishim ha'kesef vo'ashlich esay beis Hashem be'eretz Yisrael. The 30 are going to be put in the oitzar. Where's the oitzar? Eretz Yisrael is the oitzar. Uminayin hashloishim, uminyin hashloishim medrash agada. What is the number 30? Where does it come from? It's a medrash agada. Shehuftach Avram Avinu bekach shlo yehi dor pochus mishloishim tzadikim minayin ko yihye zar echa. What's the word yihye? Yihye is begimatria 30. So we learn over here quite a bit over here. Taking note of many of the differences. Even though the Rashi and the Mitzudas definitely overlap to a small degree, there are still some major differences. Difference number one is that according to Rashi, according to the Mitzudas first, these tzaddikim are an investment for the Bayis Shalishi. According to Rashi, there's no mention of the Beis Hamikdash. There's no mention whatsoever. The Oitzar is Eretz Yisrael. We're just talking about tzaddikim living in every generation as a zchus, seemingly, that we should survive. The world needs tzaddikim present in order that on their merit the world continues to exist. We're not discussing making investments for the long term. We're discussing the present. That is an important difference between the two. And Rashi, the other difference is, according to Rashi, Rashi says that the number 30 is part of a larger number, 45. 30 is not to be viewed in a vacuum. It's part of 45. 15 and above all, 30 in Eretz Yisrael, according to the Mitzudos, there is no mention of 45. There's 30. Vizehu. There's 30 for this purpose. There's something for that purpose. Then nothing to do with one another. And the other major difference between Rashi and the Mitzudos is, according to the Mitzudos, we're discussing the future. We're not discussing this generation that Zechariah is presently living in. According to Rashi, we're discussing the present. Zechariah is here today and is discussing looking back in the past. In the past, there were some very good people. We had some kings and we had some very great tragedies. There were three shepherds, which according to Rashi learns, Yehoyachaz, and then was Yeravim ben Asa. And the third one was Asaliah. We're talking about the Shavuos. That was another pain. I think it was the Radak. That was Yoshiyahu. Okay, there were many, many different opinions, but according to Rashi, Rashi was going back to the very early times, the earlier times of the Bayis Rishon, and now we're continuing over here at the present. Rashi is addressing the later period of the Bayis Rishon, and looking ahead to the future into the Bayis Sheni, and mentioning over here these tzaddikim. And the mystery, though, is how come Rashi was very selective in who selected the Chorosh v'Hamas. This is very important over here. What Rashi over here says. Rashi says the Chorosh and the Masker, which literally means the craftsmen and the gatekeepers, they were tzaddikim. We know that Yehoyachin went into exile by Nebuchadnezzar 11 years before the Korban Bayis Sheni. With whom did Yehoyachin go into exile with? With the Chorosh, the Hamasker. How many people did they number? Approximately 10,000 people. If I'm not mistaken, 10,000 people. The Chorosh, the Hamasker. Who was the Chorosh, the Hamasker? So the Parshanim, those who read the Pasuk very literally, they always tell us it means people that were skilled laborers, people that knew how to make nuclear bombs, all of the scientists, all of the craftsmen, the silversmiths, the metalsmiths, people who knew how to make weapons, the intelligentsia, the smart people, the Hamasker. Hamasker means the gatekeepers, it means the Defense Department, the Pentagon, all the people who work for the Department of Defense. They were put on buses and sent off to Babel not to make trouble, not to develop weapons of mass destruction to defeat the enemy Nebuchadnezzar. These were not religious people according to the simple understanding. These were just people that were a threat to Nebuchadnezzar. But Chazal have a very different opinion, and they understand the Chorosh HaMasker refers to these were the most brilliant Talmidei Chachamim. When they spoke, the silence was deafening. Everyone wanted to hear every single word that this person said. So the silence, there was no need to say, can everyone please mute yourself? There was never a need for a mute button in those days. Zoom didn't have a mute button. It wasn't necessary. People were so quiet because they did not want to miss one word that came out of there. Everyone was a deaf mute when these people spoke. Masker means they closed the sugya. When they finished the topic, there was nothing more that needed to be said. They covered every nuance, every little dot was elaborated upon, was covered. There was nothing more to discuss. These were the most brilliant Talmidei Chacham. It's very fascinating. You have this all the time where Chazal have a very different look at the Pesukim. The Pashtonim, you read the Pasuk, Ayin Panim Torah, Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. When you look at the Pasuk, it's read on a very simple level. Nebuchadnezzar was threatened by, he took over Eretz Yisrael. He didn't want trouble. He took with him all the skilled warriors, the skilled people. They should not pose a threat. But Chazal, when they read the same sukkah, they say that's not what happened. I mean, maybe it is part of the equation, but they have a very different religious approach to understanding the pasuk. And here Rashi, just naturally, he says that. He says, Hashem has, in every generation, there are 30 tzaddikim. The number 30 is just a mashal. It means a small number. There are a small number. Who are the tzaddikim of this generation? The Chorosh, the Hamasker. Chorosh HaMasker, Mandekar Shemei, Chazal, the Chorosh HaMasker with the Talmidei Chacham. What's very interesting is, this is very interesting, today, you're not going to be able to persuade me otherwise. I know it's, I'm saying that it's a little nasty, but Talmidei Chachamim are not necessarily tzaddikim. Mayor's laughing over here. Talmidei Chachamim, they're trying to be tzaddikim. We'll give them the benefit of the doubt. The people who are today known to be the most brilliant Talmidei Chachamim and have nice choshev asfarim, are they tzaddikim? Are they? I don't know. I hope so. V'ameich kulam tzaddikim. There's a great expectation that they should be tzaddikim because they know quite a bit. They know everything that it says in the Torah. They know that it says, don't steal, don't accept bribes, don't commit this avera, don't do that avera. They know what it says. There's no excuse for them. But do they adhere to what it says? Or do they practice one thing and preach something else? Well, unfortunately, it's a reality that just because a person is a Talmud Chacham and is very popular on Torah anytime, has a very big shir, does not mean he is a tzaddik. Doesn't mean hayluchot v'hayluchot. Tzaddikim, shir shoemaker, person who sits in a shop and patches up people's shoes and doesn't even make minimum wage, he can be a tzaddik. The whole world can be resting on his shoulders. So what I find it to be very interesting is Chazal, when they talk about the Chosh V'Hamasker, to the best of my knowledge, nowhere does it say that the Chosh V'Hamasker were tzaddikim. It says the Chosh V'Hamasker in a rabbinic approach were Talmidei Chachamim, brilliant Talmidei Chachamim. When they spoke, silence. When they discussed the sugya, they covered every last dot. There was nothing more to be said. That does not mean that they are the tzaddikim in whose merit the world endures. Doesn't mean that. Yet Rashi here says it does. Rashi here says, who are the 30 tzaddikim that whose merit the world continues to exist? The Chorosh V'Hamasker. Excuse me. The Chorosh V'Hamasker are Talmidei Chachamim. Just being a Talmud Chacham does not automatically give you a passport to be a tzaddik. It means you're a Talmud Chacham. Good for you. But you have the same struggles and nisyonos in life that everyone else has. You have the same issues of same problems. Obviously, Rashi is telling us that this is more like metaphysical. In order to have siyata, see, this is an assumption that we make today, which I don't know how true it is anymore today. But there's an assumption that we make is that in order to succeed in learning, to be a Talmud Chacham, it requires siyata d'shmaya. You can take, and this is even a fact, you take the most brilliant scientists in the world. This has been proved. There are a lot of funny stories about this. I can't quote you any of them, but there are supposedly a lot of stories where some of the world-renowned Nobel Prize winners, most brilliant scientists in the secular world, they sat down to learn a Daf Gemara, and they just don't get it. They really don't. They don't can't grasp. They cannot grasp the real meaning, depth of what the Talmud is trying to say. How could that be? They are acknowledged as being the most brilliant minds of the generation. And the answer is because Torah, the Chochmah of Torah, it's not pure logic. There's a divine element in it, which is very sensitive to Yiras Hashem. And if you don't have that Yiras Hashem, there's something lacking, there's something preventing a person from being able to succeed in his Torah knowledge. The classic Chazal say this almost explicitly regarding Doyek HaDoimi. Doyek HaDoimi was David HaMelech's arch enemy. Why? Because they went to yeshiva together. And Doyek HaDoimi possibly was a better IQ than David HaMelech. But David always was able to achieve what the Gemara says, La suke shmeitza aliba dehilchasa. He was always able to come to a conclusion that was correct. Whereas Doyek HaDoimi, even though he may have been much smarter, he was unable to achieve that success. Why? Because he didn't have the Yirah Shamayim of David HaMelech. So this is a principle which Rashi here is alluding to, that if a person has succeeded in achieving success in Torah knowledge, being that Torah knowledge is not something which is pure logic, this divinity in the Torah logic, that automatically means the person must be a real Yorei Shamayim, which makes him into a tzaddik. You know, that's a very tough pill to swallow. And in our generation, it's very difficult to swallow. Okay, in our generation, it's a whole different ball game today. But look at Rav Moshe Feinstein. Is there anyone in the world that will tell you, in their dealings with Rav Moshe Feinstein, that they have not met a person that is more, has more integrity, more sensitivity, more Yirah Shemayim? I mean, there are so many countless stories. I know my mother always told me the story that my family, we lived in the Lower East Side before we moved to the co-ops. We lived, I don't even know where it was exactly, in one of these buildings, the Lower East Side, where my grandparents lived upstairs and Rav Moshe Feinstein lived downstairs. And my mother was, my mother, my she had a sister, the Baruch Chaim Tovim, and my mother was born to my grandparents in a much later stage in their life. They're very protective of her. And one day, a boiling hot kettle of water spilled on my mother's arm. And my mother shrieked. And Rav Moshe was downstairs, and he heard my mother shriek like a little child. He ran up the steps. He opened the door on his own. He opened the door, and he saw my mother standing there with the hot water burning, shrieking. And he just froze. He froze, and he started to cry like a baby. Can you imagine that? That sensitivity? And Rav Moshe was the Gadol Hadar. Is there a Shaila in the generation that did not come to his telephone? Lasuke Shmaitza Alib de Hilchasa. Okay, Lasuke Shmaitza, when he give brachas, he would only, his you know what his bracha was? You should be a Yorei Shamayim. People don't say that too often today. Today, you go to a bracha, they say you should be very rich and you should give me permission. You should give me commission. He would say you should be a Yorei Shamayim. That was Amosh. And Amosh was from the door. Asuke Shmaitza Lim Hilchasa. Because it goes hand in hand. It really does go hand in hand. Even though today it doesn't seem like it goes hand in hand, and unfortunately I don't think it does to a degree today, hand in hand. But in between the lines of Rashi, there's something very, very powerful. Rashi talking about tzaddikim. And who does he mention? Chorosh v'hamaske. The Gemara makes absolutely no mention of the righteousness of the Chorosh and the Maske. All it says about the Chorosh and the Maske is that they were brilliant Talmudic scholars. V'zehu. When they opened up their mouths, everyone was quiet. When they discussed the sugya, there was nothing more to discuss. Doesn't say they were righteous people. They were honest. They had integrity. And they were not suspect of doing crimes that unfortunately we hear about today all over the place. So how does Rashi know to say here in Sefer Zechariah that the Chorosh and the Hamasker, they're included in the 30 tzaddikim in which the generation survives? The answer is that the type of Torah that Rashi is discussing is the real deal. It's not just Talmudic studies that you can take a course in Yale University about Talmudic studies. It's the real deal. And when it's the real deal demands Yirah Shemayim. And if you've achieved the real deal, that is a badge of honor that you indeed are Yirah Shemayim. Otherwise, Hashem would not have granted you that success. All right, we'll stop over here. Take a short break. After the break, we'll talk a really good topic. We'll talk about genetic, or what's it called, stem cell meat. Did anyone buy meat that was made in a laboratory? They make meat today by taking stem cells and producing artificial meat. What is the status of this meat? Is it really fleishigs? Is it kosher? Can you eat it together with milk? What bracha do you make on it? V'chulu v'chulu. a really good article, a really good book from a right Tzvi Reisman from Los Angeles. And it's a great title. I'll show you the book, tell you all about it when we come back in a few moments.
One, five together. Yeah.
Three and then four.
No, it's one and five
together.
Together.
Okay. Three and then four. And then you have to press enter very hard.
Yeah, okay.
And before you do start the whole process, you have to first reset it.
Yeah,
and sometimes you have to do it a few times.
Okay.
It doesn't always work.
Okay. I'm going to get some food.